The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
So I just, again, continued to share what I knew to be the right way, or the path of least resistance is not always the same. For me, I didn't get resistance because I believed in what I was doing. People, they naturally see that. Other people, if you're trying to do what I'm doing and you don't believe in it, you're going to get a lot of resistance. So teaching people to sell from your own heart, you know, get out of your head and into your heart. And when you are 100% sold, it will be simple for you to sell, because you know you're just speaking truth and you're just sharing your opinions with what products are best. And in the book, I use this example. So if you have a kid with, you know, you have a friend that has a kid with psoriasis, right? And it's terrible, because my nephew had it and I watched him struggle, you know,
so painful,
it was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had a product that you knew would fix it, but you wouldn't tell your friend because you're afraid she's going to think you're selling, then you're being selfish. Right. I mean, that's,
and you don't really care about your friend.
Right. And you don't have to give it to your friend for free, because that's you not having any self-confidence. Give your friend a sample and say, hey, I noticed that, you know, Joey or Mark, whatever, is struggling with this. Hey, try this and see how it goes.
Right.
And then teaching them the follow-up process. Yes, you should follow up. And yes, it's okay to make money from your friends. They're going to buy it from someone.
Right.
Don't you think that they would rather help contribute to you and your family's growth than a stranger? So stop trying to give all your services away and backpedal your way out of sales. You know, I say some people that, you know, your friends would have to, you know, run after you and tackle you in order to get a sale, because you go, oh, did you like it? Because if you didn't, it's okay. And they're just,
right,
you know,
right. They're
like,
afraid.
Stop.
Yeah. Be a little,
you know,
confident.
Ask. Just, did you try it? Did it work? No, it didn't. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me try and find something else. Or, oh, it did. That's excellent. Ask them, would you like to purchase some? This is how much it is. You know, would you like to get some? Because any parent that can resolve a problem for their child will throw money at it.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests, where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Vicki Fitch here, author, speaker, international business consultant, and social media strategist.
All right, Vicki. So thanks for coming on my show, because I know you're busy. You have live shows, international appearances, interviews with Oprah. I don't know what you're doing. You're out there talking to all kinds of people. So I appreciate Terry hooking us up. I told you I haven't read all your books yet, but I've been looking through Vic the Bully, and I have the other one on Kindle, I think, right?
Awesome. I think so. I'm not sure which versions you got, but super excited to hear that you're diving into the content.
But you wrote them. So
I did.
I'm close there. Okay. Yes. So maybe you can, which you probably don't do because you're usually running the show. go back. Let's talk about your, you know, your background, your history, sure. how you built your career, how you got to where you're doing, and, you know.
Absolutely. Well, what do you want to know? I mean, literally, if you started the first book, you know, I started my first business when I was 12 years old, which, yeah. you know, is fairly interesting, you know, because again, it came out of a need for something. And that's where I learned about how to be an entrepreneur is because I wanted a phone in my room. You know, we didn't get an iPhone 6 when we were 6 years old back right. in the day, you know, we had the curly corded thing,
pink
you know,
phones, against, right? Yeah. My sister had a princess phone. The thing looked like it was something right? out of France. It was really funny.
But yeah. It's, you know, it had that big cord and it has to be stuck to the wall.
Right.
But I wanted a phone in my room because the, you know, in the current household situation back then is there was a phone in the living room where everybody got to hear the conversation or right. a phone in my parents' bedroom. And so, you know, as a teenager, a preteen girl, you start wanting to have privacy and
now, was this to get your own line or just
my
the
own
phone?
Line? Oh, no, this is my own line.
So
this
who's
is
paying
like,
for this? This is a bill right. every month, right?
Well, see, now that's you sound like my father. That's right. exactly what he said. He's like, I'm not paying for a phone line in your room.
Right.
And I was, you know, I was like, okay, well, looking for jobs and all the babysitting jobs have been covered because I had, you know, older
well, you
brother
12,
and older
right?
sister.
You're
right.
not getting working papers to go work at McDonald's. At
not yet, but. Right. See, when you're determined,
right?
When you're determined, his friend was there who had an insurance agency. And he said, I'll pay you if you can get people to let me give them insurance quotes. And I was like,
at 12?
Okay, 12. Yeah. I'm pretty mature. I was pretty mature.
You get arrested now for sending out a 12-year-old, probably, right?
You yeah. probably could, but yeah. I was that kid that always sat with the adults listening, you know, and getting involved in the conversation.
Yeah.
And I see, I'm 6 foot tall, right? I was tall as a kid. Nobody ever, when I was 12, I probably looked
You're
like
not
I was
six
18.
Foot tall.
I am. I'm a 6 foot tall redhead.
That's so funny. I thought you were short.
Nope. I'm
I met a guy during pandemic. I met a guy during pandemic. We met for coffee. Like we'd known each other for 8 months. I get there. Uh-huh. He goes, I thought you were very short. I'm like, how did you, like, I'm about 6 feet too. I'm like, what made you? So I started asking people, like, do people uh-huh. think I'm short here? Yeah. Uh-huh. I know. Just the angle of your camera. But I had no idea.
Right. And people always say that when they meet
tall.
Me, I'm 6 foot.
Wow.
Yeah. And my, okay. well, my kids are 6'4" and 6'6".
I'm sure.
So we got some tall boys.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
But yes. So that's the first thing people say to me. Dang, you're tall.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So anyway, coming back to that, you know, wanting this. Well,
how tall were you when you were 12?
Well, let's see. I know I was 5'6" in fifth grade.
That's tall for a 12.
Right. Because yeah. I was taller than my teacher because she would yeah. always ask me to get, you know, get things off the shelves and stuff. So, So I was tall. I looked older. I sounded older. I was very articulate, you know, anyway. So the greatest part of the story is, you know, back in the day we had phone books, like,
yeah,
you know,
the big yellow
38
phone
pounds,
books.
You know, yeah. bringing it back in.
It was the Bionic Man, the Bionic Woman, four of them on TV, remember?
Exactly. We are totally dating ourselves. Oh, but
that's been popping up on my YouTube feed lately.
Has it?
The Bionic Woman, Bionic Man channel. Yeah.
You know, I did love me some good Lindsay Wagner.
That was good. Yeah, exactly. The special effects were, yeah. I think I showed the Bionic Man to my son when he was like really little. He thought it was the greatest thing ever saw in his whole life.
You know, I had the original Bionic Woman lunchbox.
Yeah, those were, that probably right? worth a lot of money nowadays.
They probably are. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, too bad.
But going back, yeah. as he said,
you're
he would
12.
Pay me.
You're still 12.
Right?
You're still looking
I'm
for
12.
A job.
I'm very tall. Yeah. I am very articulate, very outgoing. And so he's, I think partly he was probably trying to get rid of me so they could go play cribbage. You know, I'm seriously. So I grabbed the phone book. I went into my parents' bedroom. I was in there for about 45 minutes and I came with about 20 people that said yes.
Oh, you just picked up the phone? You didn't go door to door?
Oh, no. I just picked up the phone and said, hi, my name is Vicky with such and such insurance company. And I was just calling to see if we can give you a free estimate. That's all I said. And some of them would say yes. Some would say, I was
cool
the
enough people,
telemarketer
they're gonna say yes, right?
before telemarketer was yeah. not cool.
It's a numbers right? game, right?
And he yeah. almost had a heart attack when I came out, he was like, what? So right. he offered me a job. I worked every day. My dad did not want me using his phone. So I got the phone line installed in like with less than a week and I just had to pay him back. And because he didn't want me making all these phone calls from his
And he
phone,
couldn't put it in your own name. You're only 12.
Right. So yeah. there it was. Anyway, so that's how I started. And then I started recognizing there was a need. When there was a need, if I could fill it, I could make
Somebody
money.
Would pay you for it. Right. Sure.
My dad was a truck driver. He wanted his trucks washed. I also did my dad's books at 12 years old. Right. I was doing bookkeeping at 12. And
it's a good lesson to learn.
Right. And so then I started hiring my friends to do the trucks while I did the book. So I was making money while they were doing stuff. And so it just, this entrepreneurial spirit started.
That's a good story. I like that. My dad was the same way. I'll be like, Dad, I want to get a stereo for my bedroom. He's like, you got any money? Like, no, I'm 12. How do I, you know, and I would do that. I would string rackets because I was a tennis player. I would make fishing rods. And I started detailing cars too in the summer when I was in high school because I, you know, I was cleaning my uncle's car at his office and all the people were like, oh, I can't get to the car wash. I don't have time. Can you wash our car? And those people started lining up.
See,
you know, you're the entrepreneur by accident. It's the accidental entrepreneur.
There we are.
The story. Okay. So, okay. So that takes us through where, like you just finished last week washing trucks.
Well, there, no, I continue to do that. I moved out on my 18th birthday. I bought my first house when I was 19 and I started my first company with employees when I was 20.
Very nice.
Right. I started stashing that cash and started, you know, recognizing that, you know, I was pretty independent. I did not want to, I didn't want to stay, you know, kind of stuck. So I needed to stash the cash.
That's a Vicky Fitchism.
It's true. It's a Fitchism for sure. You know, if you haven't checked out the back of the book, there is a Fitchinary in the back.
I did see parts of it. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. But that's all marketing and branding. We'll get into all that stuff. So
absolutely.
All right. So you bought your first home and when you were 19.
Yes.
I don't know. Could you do that today? I guess you could, right?
You only have to be 18.
You can sign a contract, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You had credit. It would be harder now because you got to have people that believe in you. I had a realtor, as a matter of fact, who I reconnected with maybe about 10 years ago because I bought my first house in Corona. Her name was Sandy Klein. And I saw her I was speaking at their chamber meeting. And I was like, Sandy, you know, this is the woman that sold me my first home, you know? And so it was pretty amazing. And just recognizing that the value of someone who's determined to get something done and, you know, having the direction, I guess, because people, everybody kept telling me I was crazy. You know, when I wanted to buy a house, they're like, you're crazy. Right. You know,
they can't see themselves doing it. Has nothing to do with you.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Too much responsibility. Don't do that to yourself. Right. And then when I quit my job 6 months later to start my own company, they just went ballistic again. And, you know, like, you are out of your mind. And I started this thing, which I talk about in the book, saying, you know, don't tell me I can't do it till I've already done it. Then feel free to let me know.
Because I got tired, right?
Because like I started feeling their stress, like, maybe I shouldn't.
Well, that's what happened.
Catching all their doubt. Yeah.
Now you said you quit your job. You were 19. So how long have you been working there to begin with?
I started there when I was, I think, 17 and a half, but I went from answering phones to office manager in less than 30 days. And then I ended up being the assistant to the president and traveling all over the world, running a division, a multi-million dollar division of the company. So,
and you didn't go to college or did you later?
I did not. This is another thing about my dad. Okay. I wanted to go to college, but I wanted to be an actress.
Okay.
And so I was taking marketing classes and I was taking dance and you know, stuff that you
theater
and stuff you need for acting.
Sure.
But because I owned my own house and because I, you know, had to work full time, it was a little bit stressful financially. So I asked my dad if he would help me and he said no. And he goes, I'm not paying for your dance lessons. You know, because he couldn't see the value in what I wanted to do.
Right.
And he paid for my sister to go to college. But he didn't, again, he's from that era that's playing versus, you know, working.
Right. That's not a real career.
Yeah. So he said no. So I ended up dropping out of college. I hired one of my professors, my marketing professors at my job to come in and work a marketing position where I was the assistant to the president.
That's so funny.
It is. I know.
Now he had applied.
It was a girl.
Did you seek her out or no?
No, I just said to her when my boss, the president of our company, said that they were looking for somebody. I said, you know, I have somebody. I think.
Oh, so you did seek her out. Yeah.
Well, I had met her already and I liked her. And like I said, I already knew a lot about
marketing.
It wasn't
like she showed up for an interview and you're like,
Professor
Susie.
I connected her. Yeah, I connected her. Her name is Madeline. I connected her.
Very nice. Yeah, so okay. All right. Good story. So that takes you to about 2 weeks later. So now you're 19,
I'm 19
rich, you own yachts and all kinds of buildings. And
yeah. Oprah and I were hanging out
of the company.
You know, but she couldn't keep up with me. Yeah. So
look, there's a good lesson here, right? This is a lesson of you didn't know any better. You don't want anybody to tell you no, you know, and you just did it and you can do it.
But the thing I do recommend people do, listen to the information that other people have. There's a difference between people providing you information you might not have,
right?
And people sucking you dry with their doubt. They're what I call the bullies, right? The bullies in your head, the fear, doubt, and shame. Like, don't do it. You'll go bankrupt. You know, this whole, yes, there you go. You do have it right there in your head.
Like the bully in your head, yeah.
And so there's a difference. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to my son about it, my older son, about he was talking about a commercial building he might want to buy. And I said, you know, that's great if you have a plan for ROI. But if you don't, you might want to take a look at what's going on right now with most people working from home and how many, you know, commercial buildings are abandoned and that kind of thing. So it's information. I'm not telling him to do it or not do
it.
But
that's different.
Information is what we should provide people, because then they can make an informed decision, right? Instead of just going on to these, you know, making decisions based on not having enough information.
Right. Well, so, it's because you're not really helping people. What you do is just projecting your own fear onto them. Right. Now, how old is your son?
He's 24.
So you're like, what are you like, where have you been all? What happened when you were 12? Why are you waiting until 24? What are you, an underachiever?
He did go to college. He did. Okay. He got a scholarship for sports and academics and went to college. He graduated with 2 degrees. So, you know, we cut him a little slack. You know, we cut him a little slack.
And I thought you were going to tell me you went on a volleyball scholarship to college. You said you're 6 foot or something.
No, he did. He had a volleyball and a basketball scholarship and academic scholarship.
But I thought that was you would have done that.
Oh, gotcha.
You're 6 foot tall. That is really funny. If Terry asked me, I would have said, oh, your wife, she's probably like 5'3", 5'4".
Right? Yeah. So, well, yeah, Terry's 6'2", so we're both 6 foot.
That's why I have tall children.
Yes.
All right. So I love this, because this is the kind of like conversation where I talk to all these people. They're like, no, you can't do it. You can do it. But you just did it, and you started like 40 years earlier than most people.
Right?
So, yeah.
I always tell when people on my live stream show, they'll say, how old are you? And I'll say, I'm 22. Right. So Terry and I celebrated our 26th wedding anniversary yesterday, and we have a 24-year-old son. So it starts not really where the math, you know, we could try the new math, but it's just starting not to work out. I'm going to have to actually accept a little bit of older age.
Well, they say, what is the 60s, the new 40? So I'm 55. So that makes me only like 32 or something.
Right.
Like. So exactly. it's in your mind.
Exactly.
All right. So tell me about like how you started, you know, working, like, because now you really, what you really do is you advise people, you motivate them, you do all that kind of stuff. So take me through that like process, because obviously when you're, I mean, I was more of an introvert, but when you're in your early 20s in college, you like take on the world, right? Or you're working, but you weren't like, I'm going to stand up on stage and motivate people. So where did that all come from? Where did you start thinking about it?
Great question. So I started my first business, which is a bookkeeping and tax company. And people are like, you are crazy. You're 19 years old or 20. Now I'm 20. People are not going to take you seriously.
You pick something that everyone needs. Right? They need it every year.
Right? They need it. I'm good at it. I've been doing it since I was 12.
You probably can underprice the competition at that point, right? Yeah,
I actually charge more because
I'm not saying you shouldn't underprice. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because
people
that's the
will
thing.
Pay. Right.
I'm a studier. Like, I actually became a problem resolution specialist with the IRS because people are afraid with the IRS, you know? So I started doing bookkeeping and taxes, bookkeeping and payroll, and I added on taxes. And then I started recognizing people were coming to me with these, you know, notice, and they're paranoid. I was like, well, why are you afraid? And I mean, I honestly, that's how I felt. Why are we afraid? They're people, there's rules. You didn't break the rules. So why are you worried? But again, it's like that, you know, ignorance on fire. I didn't know.
Well, people are getting those calls now, you know, from, this is the IRS. I get calls from clients. I think they're coming to arrest me on Saturday morning. I'm like, listen, the IRS doesn't do that.
They're on their way. I know they are.
I'm like, do you owe any taxes? No. Well, then they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. People.
Even if you do, they're still not coming over.
They mail things. They don't call you and say, hi, it's John. Give me your account number.
And yet people are falling for that.
I know.
What is up with that? But you know,
people fall for a lot of stuff.
They're scared.
I know.
So anyway, that's what I started doing that. And then
so you're an enrolled agent or you were an enrolled agent?
I was not an enrolled. I was going to take it. I was actually going to go get my CPA. But then I realized, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way to CPAs, but the CPAs I was working with, I knew more than they did. And why do I want to spend another, you know, X amount of years busting my butt to get a credential that really only mattered to people that are looking for the credential, because I could do everything I needed to do. I mean, all I had to do was get a power of attorney to you know, right, represent people. The form, I didn't right have to have that CPA. It's just other people if they wanted it.
Yeah, you need a CPA if you're working in public accounting, and, you know.
Right. I didn't need it. Absolutely. So I did that. And then when I met my husband, Terry, you know Terry, when Terry and I met and we were starting to date and stuff, I couldn't go on trips and stuff with him because of tax season. And anyway, he got me to sell that business, which was my baby. And that's okay where I learned that businesses were made to be built and sold. We've built 100%. And sold four companies, right? But I didn't, it was still my baby.
Entrepreneurs don't know that. They don't realize that.
I started when I was 19. What right did I know? I know this is my baby and that I've been building it. And I ended up being the, like one of the top franchises in the country. And at my very
system.
It was a franchise. So we started off with their base software, but then of course I didn't like it because it was very limiting. So I went and got my own stuff. And
of course you did.
Yeah, right. it wasn't right serving the purpose.
You're like,
it
I can make this better.
Right. Of course, and again, I still believe that, you know, using templates and concepts work for a time, but when you've, you know, moved beyond those, then you need to. But anyway, so I did that. And then Terry got me to actually sell my business to go run a division. He was the vice president of a publicly traded company and got me to go run a division of that company because we were going to get married. And like I said, I couldn't go traveling and stuff with him because of my, tax time gets ugly. And then when people have issues, they want help right now. So I did that. I sold it. And, you know, then, like I said, I did exceptionally well at that job, you know, taking it from a $300,000 division to $1.2 million in less than 9 months. And again, it's really just from understanding people and marketing correctly, not even like from a marketing degree.
So it was really
recognizing
a business development
the value
position
of relation. Well, it was building up a division, getting people to do referrals with us, and developing
like a sales team type of a thing.
It was a pool company and getting the pool technicians going out and actually creating relationships with pool technicians and getting them to refer to the business.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, so, you know, it was relational. It's about people and relationships. And then we left there and started a concrete resurfacing company. And while we were doing that, Terry says that was the best time in his life because I did everything. He got to go sell, which is what he does. He loves people and communicating and helping them get what they want. And I did all the, you know, booking and scheduling and training of employees and ordering supplies and scheduling the crews, you know, those things. And so again, you have all this experience, right? You start and when you've started so many businesses from the ground up, you know what you have to do to get in there and get things done. And so when I was pregnant, I wanted to be a stay-home mom. Like Terry and I decided, you know, I want to be a stay-home mom. I want to take care of the kids. And I didn't realize that I would have so much time on my hands if I was just a single mom. I'm too active for that. But I tried, and every time I'd try and get out, then the company just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. So finally, eventually we sold that too. But I started in the direct sales industry just because I loved scrapbooking, and I didn't think about running it as a business, but I loved scrapbooking. And so I always believe you should do things that you love, and you should always have an outlet for things that are super great. And anyway, so I ended up doing that and being top 10 worldwide. I did it for 17 years. Top 10
in the
world.
How are you top? What is there? Is a ranking for scrapbookers?
Well, there's a ranking for your company. You know, it was an international company with over 80,000 consultants.
So it was it was like a network marketing company.
It's a direct sales company. Yes.
For scrapbooking?
Yes. Creative Memories is what
I remember when we had my son, my wife wanted to get into scrapbooking. Uh-huh. So I got her one of those cases, you know, on wheels with all the scissors. I don't think she did one scrapbook. I don't think she did one page.
You know why? Because it's completely overwhelming, which is why I was so successful at what I did. Because, and again, I bring this back because I think it's important for people who want to be entrepreneurs to recognize the value of understanding other people.
Yeah.
I knew there was three objections to people doing scrapbooking, right? Time, money, and space, right? And the only other thing preventing them was overwhelm, was right. absolute overwhelm. So I dealt with the three main issues of time, money, and space by figuring out a way to work in a 2x2 area, to work on your scrapbooks, right. how to have everything organized in the case. And it required money, but I gave them payment options to do it and gave them opportunities to earn free product, you know, through people, and then taught them what's called a 15-minute focus, how to work on your scrapbooks in 15 minutes a day, every day, without ever feeling overwhelmed or having more than a 2x2 area that you had to use. And so instead of $50 per person, the average sale for consultants, mine was $500. So, you know, average per person, some people $2,000, and people are like, you can't sell $2,000 of scrapbook supplies to someone. I was like, you really can, because, and again, in Direct Selling 101, which is the book before that one,
that's the one I have on Kindle.
That's the one we talk about buying thresholds. A buying threshold is an imaginary number that you won't spend right. without either feeling guilty or consulting another person, right? It's like just this number, like whatever it is. But if your buying threshold is $25 and Marianne's is $10,000, then you're missing out on that gap by not finding out what she wants.
Right. And you're being held back by your own expectations.
Exactly.
Of what people will spend. It's your largest check, whatever. That's a big number for you, but for them, it might not be. Now, let me ask you this question, because I started out in sales out of law school. My dad was in the insurance business. So I said, listen, I got to learn how to sell. So mm-hmm. I went there, and that's, you know, life insurance. They only want to buy it when they can't get it. They don't want it, right?
They only want the payout.
If somebody calls you and says, I need life insurance, probably because they had a heart attack in the morning. Or something.
Right.
So I learned all the sales techniques. So I'm always curious. So did the company teach you those methods, or was that something that you created? And then they're like, how in the world are you selling this much stuff? And then you said, well, let me show you. This is how
exactly.
you do it.
Exactly.
So how did you, what made you?
If we back up a teeny bit, Terry is the one that got me to go to my first motivational conference, right?
Okay.
And so where I saw Tom Hopkins and at different times saw Zig Ziglar and John Maxwell and, you know, just these different groups. He's the one that introduced me to that. And I am an avid reader. And so like I consume at least, you know, 5-10 books a month, but usually now audio listening while I'm getting ready or doing things. But I'm an avid consumer of content. And so when I started recognizing those values, I actually created a course inside the company we worked at called Dreaming into Achieving, teaching people how to take their goals and break them down and what Tom Hopkins calls reduce it to the ridiculous, right? And come up with daily goals in order to do it. So I started building those things. And so when, you know, the whole concept of triplicate of choice is giving people that kind of good, better, best, or recognizing their value. The difference between me and them is that they would always go for the middle, right? Good, better, best. You can shoot for the top, but you're probably going to hit the middle. I didn't. I shot for the top because I believed that was best for the people, not because I wanted more money.
Right.
Like I'm all about, I'm all about people. And I knew if I could handle their hurdles, right, then I could do it. And I heard a little from this person that made sense. And I talk about her in the book. Kimberly Brackett talked about how she created this sales process. And I enhanced that to fit what I believed. And then Don Oldham was the top recruiter in the company. And I started recognizing, you know, asking questions and say, you know, my famous quote was just out of curiosity. Have you ever thought about doing something like this? And then you bite your tongue.
Right.
Shut up.
Yeah, because being legitimately curious teaches you a lot of things.
Because most people have thought of it. Because the answer comes out of them is, I could never do that.
Right.
And I'll say, I didn't say I think you could do it. I said, have you ever thought about it?
Right.
And so then it kind of, you know, breaks down the barrier a little bit, so where you can actually say, well, so, you know, and what I call the if I could, would use, you know, so, well, my husband would never, you know, he'll never support me, or I could never make money, or that I said, so, or, you know, if I could show you how to get your husband's support, or, you know, or if I could show you how to fit it into your schedule without feeling stressed out, then would you be interested?
Right.
And then when we get down to
that
question.
You're very good at breaking it down to the point where, is that really an objection?
Right.
Or if it was not there, would it not be
peeling the onion, right? What's the real objection?
Yeah, no, that's what a good salesperson does.
So then I was the top 10 worldwide in recruiting for, you know, for more than a decade. And I was in sales and recruiting top for the entire world in my company for more than a decade. And it was, I never tried. That's the thing. It was never a get up in the morning and grind. It was, right. Well, I love what I do.
You enjoyed it.
How can I help people?
That also comes through. Like if you're like worried about your next paycheck, you're looking at the big sale, people know that it's all vibrational energy, you know, and it's all the bad stuff. So then if you really believed in what you do, you love what you do, you feel good about it. People just feel good about being around you. It's the way it is. And it becomes infectious. And but some people, I don't know what it is. It's also some people have it in them to absorb and learn and take advantage of the things that they pass along the way. Like there might've been other people that went on a similar journey like you and passed the people and had the experiences, but none of it affected them. None of it sunk into them. None of them noticed it. None of, you know, I think I believe that about life. I just think that some of us early on notice, or there's somebody, an outlier that gets involved and says, you know, hey, Vicky, you know, go and talk to this guy and he'll tell you things. And you're like, oh, okay. And then he sends you to somebody else. And then you just got on that path out of not luck, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people just don't get it. Like you talk to people and they just don't get it.
Right. It's a desire to actually consume the content. My mom used to always say I was a sponge, right? Because I would ask the adults questions that I really wanted to know the answer to. Like, why are you doing that? And I would watch them.
Yeah.
I would watch them when they're playing cards. And I would know when they're lying because you could see. And, you know, now I know they're called, you know, these micro expressions. But when they kind of squint or they do that, like I would just watch them.
Right.
Right. Yeah. They call it a tell, but then you'd see it in other things, right? Not playing cards now.
Right.
When people are dodging questions. And And so I just started recognizing and then calling it out what it was and saying, really? Because it seems like, you know, and without trying to be offensive or really butting heads with people, but helping them to see other possibilities by asking the skill of asking questions.
Yeah. I think a lot of it also has to do with the use of your time and your success, right? So if I'm meeting with somebody about some legal issue, I want to know right away, is this really something that's, well, first of all, it's serious.
Right.
You know, of course, can they afford me? But also, is it something you really want to take care of? Or you're just kind of fishing around for, you know, information. And then I could go on to the next. It was the same thing with life insurance. You wanted to know right away where this person was a prospect. Certainly you want to know if they have a heart condition, but you know, if they're really not going to do it, what are you sitting on somebody's couch and falling asleep at 7 o'clock at night? It's just kidding yourself. But I think there's people that I met along the way who were just, they got it. Like there was a natural thing about them when it comes to recognizing what these opportunities were and how they sold and they believed in what they did.
Right.
And then there's other people that are just like, oh, they don't get it. Like, they don't even see.
They're the check collectors, right? They're just, give me my money. Just, okay, bye-bye. Be on your way.
Yeah. I've had people ask me, you know, these insurance agents, other salespeople. Well, I was talking to somebody, this person, and they really need this, but if they want to buy this and it's more, I'll make more money if I do that. And I said, well, what does it have to do with the money? Well, you know, I got to pay my... What's the right thing to do?
Right.
They should be doing that. Okay. Well then tell them to do that. They'll appreciate that. And that'll come.
Be honest.
Come back to you in spades.
Right. And people would say, well, what if they get mad at me? Like, you know, like I don't want to tell them that this scrapbook kit is better for them. And I said, well, do you believe it is? Well, yeah, because they're going to want. I said, then why won't you tell them? If you don't tell them the truth, because it's so much money, they're going to think I'm just trying to take their money.
Throw you out of their house.
Well, the thing is, though, honesty represents itself. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, if they get mad, then, you know, then why? Why would they get mad? If they don't believe you, but if you don't believe you, they're not going to believe you. So you have to actually believe it first. You need to really believe that's best for them. If you don't, then don't try and sell it because they'll feel it. You have to. And that's why I always told people. And again, when you read Direct Selling 101, you have to find the value first. Find the value in what you're selling and really recognize the value or sell something else.
Yeah. You know? Good point.
Right? Just stop.
If you don't believe in this, sell something else.
Exactly. And that's, and like I said, once you do, when you get rid of that, I have to make money. And like what Tom Hopkins said, you know, the people can see the dollar signs in your eyes.
Yeah.
Then when you change that and you're authentic, then you don't care if people are upset. Like they're not upset. If the truth upsets them, or your opinion, that how you can't change
that.
Can't
do more than that. Yeah.
Right. You can just give them what you believe because I got to tell you, which I actually talk about in the book too. If you don't tell them and they find like,
they're going to find it out anyway.
They're going to find out and they're going to be pissed at you. Yeah. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you give me my
options? What other things didn't you tell me about?
Right.
Yeah.
Why didn't you give me my options? Yeah. And so like, well, I didn't want you to get mad. well, I'm mad now, right. And I can't even do anything about it now. Right. And so, then
well, that's short-sightedness. People don't realize. I had a couple that stormed out of my office. They were insistent. They wanted this kind of trust set up with their will. We don't really do that in New Jersey too much. I said, listen, you're going to spend $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. You don't need it. It's not necessary that you don't care. And they stormed out of my office because I wouldn't do it for them. I felt like I was taking their money and it wasn't necessary. They probably got some other idiot attorney to do it.
Yeah. You know, there's lots of people that don't mind check collecting. Sure. Oh, that guy, he's so self-righteous. Yeah, here, give me the money.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. What's the matter with him?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. He doesn't know anything. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Right. Okay. So you were with the direct sales company.
Yes.
And how long did you do that?
17 years.
Oh, long
and
time.
The only reason I left is because they ended up, my heart still breaks because they ended up filing bankruptcy. Oh, they ended up because of, it wasn't even the company. The company was doing great.
Right.
Their parent company got themselves into trouble and then took all of our retirement money because they just changed it to a Rabbi trust and they were able to, you know, anyway, they raided
the company. Yeah.
Right. They did. They raided it and messed up something that was so beautiful. I mean, honestly, the people in that company, the consultants, most of us were honestly friends. I'm still friends with them to this day. I mean, I have hundreds and hundreds of people that were still connected through the direct sales industry. And so from that, because the company was flying me around to speak to, you know, other consultants and other people, how to get your sales up, how do you get your top in sales and recruiting. You're on every incentive trip. You're the top point earner, you know, flying around helping. And other people said, oh my gosh, you've built and sold 4 companies. You're top in this. Like, can you help me with my business? So I started consulting I had started businesses from the ground up. Yeah. And in a bookkeeping and tax company, I was helping other companies build and sell.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's LAW to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And so that's how the consulting part started.
Well, you built your whole resume, you built your expertise. People understood what you were doing. You showed them how to do it. You did it.
Yeah.
It was like you were a teacher saying, this is how you sell. And I'm like, what have you sold? Well, I don't sell. I teach.
Right.
Like, what?
I know those people. I don't live
stream, practice
but I can
law.
Tell
I just tell people what
it.
They need to do. I mean, right. Yeah, no, I know that. But that's the adage, right? If you don't can't sell, you teach. But that's not your case.
No. So I just, again, continued to share what I knew to be the right way or the path of least resistance is not always the same for me. I didn't get resistance because I believed in what I was doing. People, they naturally see that. Other people, if you're trying to do what I'm doing and you don't believe in it, you're going to get a lot of resistance. So teaching people to sell from your own heart, you know, get out of your head and into your heart. And when you are 100% sold, it will be simple for you to sell because you know you're just speaking truth and you're just sharing your opinions with what products are best. And in the book, I use this example. So if you have a kid you have a friend that has a kid with psoriasis, right? And it's terrible because my nephew had it and I watched him struggle, you know,
so painful,
it was horrible.
Yeah.
And you had a product that you knew would fix it, but you wouldn't tell your friend because you're afraid she's going to think you're selling, then you're being selfish. Right. I mean, that's,
and you don't really care about your friend.
Right. And you don't have to give it to your friend for free because that's you not having any self-confidence. Give your friend a sample and say, hey, I noticed that, you know, Joey or Mark, whatever, is struggling with this. Hey, try this and see how it goes.
Right.
And then teaching them the follow-up process. Yes, you should follow up. And yes, it's okay to make money from your friends. They're going to buy it from someone. Right. Don't you think that they would rather help contribute to you and your family's growth than a stranger? So stop trying to give all your services away and backpedal your way out of sales. You know, I say some people that, you know, your friends would have to, you know, run after you and tackle you in order to get a sale. Cause you go, oh, did you like it? Cause if you didn't, it's okay. And they're just,
right.
You know,
right. They're
like,
afraid.
Stop.
Yeah. Be a little confident.
Ask. Just, did you try it? Did it work? No, it didn't. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me try and find something else. Or, oh, it did. That's excellent. Ask them, would you like to purchase some? This is how much it is. You know, would you like to get some? Because any parent that can resolve a problem for their child will throw money at it. I mean, right?
That's, we wouldn't argue about that, right? Exactly.
We want to help our family. So, and women, like, we are, and I say this in a way, I want you to hear it. We're some of the best salespeople because if we really believe it, then we will share it and we will tell everybody. But women are also very often the most fearful. You know, we'll tell every single person on the planet of a product that we're using that we absolutely love. And it's a $500 package. Doesn't matter. But the minute we're selling it, they're going, okay, try this sample. And then just let me know. Right.
We've already. Exactly.
You know, because
now, if she wants it, she'll call me. I know that.
Right.
What are you? You have 1,400 people asking her to do something. She didn't remember that she had this conversation with you this morning.
Right.
Even fear. If she's well-intended. Yeah.
It's fear. So that's what Evict the Bully in Your Head is about.
Yeah.
Helping you overcome your fear and stop looking at it, you know, and start recognizing it for what it is, a bully that's hanging out in your headspace that you need to evict.
Yeah. Well, people in law, even, they're like, oh, I don't sell. It's like,
right.
Of course you do. What do you think? People just like come to your office and say, here, here's, you have to convince them that they need X, Y, and Z, whatever. People have confidence in you. You got to learn how to sell.
Exactly.
And they don't teach that stuff in law school. So you are really like the epitome of the accidental entrepreneur. I mean, you like got started when you're 12, you went from one business to the next. Now, I'm sure at the early days you didn't, but do you do business planning now, strategic planning? You write a business plan, you do those kinds
of
things?
Yes and no. I mean, I have goals and objectives.
Yeah, that's what
I write a business plan out when I'm going to, like, I'm thinking about adding another division onto my company.
That's the strategic plan.
Right.
It's still part
That
it's a marketing
part,
plan. Then there's a financial section, right? Because you're going to figure out if I'm going to add this and I lose money, what the hell am I doing it for? That type of thing.
And
right?
How long is it going to take me to recoup these costs? And, you know, and so yes,
planning,
those.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the beginning, nope, I just got on the phone and then, I could do that.
Right, exactly. Well, it gets more complex when you have employees and you got responsibility, you got taxes, you got to pay, you got to, you know, payroll, things like, if you don't plan, you could be, you know, I remember in college, I had a couple of friends and they were in like it was a direct selling business too. It was like, it was when Halon was available, like fire extinguishers. They were selling small fire extinguishers, selling door to door. Most of the people that came to work for them were, you know, sold five to their friends and then moved on. But they didn't understand the concept that if you collect $1,000 from sales, you didn't make $1,000.
Right.
And they'd be like, well, the rent's due tomorrow. And we got no money in the bank. I'm like, well, yeah, because I brought another friend in. I'm like, listen, he's the financial guy. Let him. No money leaves this, you know, and then they were a little bit better. But still, I mean, they were just like, you know, money coming at them all the time. And some people are like that.
I had a friend, well, she was actually on my team with Creative Memories, and I taught her how, and she was doing well with scrapbooking and stuff. She decided to add on a shoe business, like selling kids' shoes. She was buying them on eBay and then selling them for more.
Like a side gig type of thing.
And she started making a ton of money. She was doing really well. She never paid taxes on any of it.
Oops.
And and then all of a sudden she's like, what?
You have to pay taxes on this? What about my other job? I paid taxes on that one.
It was like, wow. How did you miss that? That there, this is a business. Like, but
well, with direct sales, do you have to withhold your own money or are they withholding it?
No, you have to withhold your own, but it's a little bit different because you're paying, right? You're paying at your wholesale cost. And, you know, I mean, you're paying at your retail cost and depending on which company you're with, like we bought it at retail and sold at wholesale. We bought it wholesale and sold at retail.
Yeah, don't do it the other way.
Right? Yeah. that's where you go bankrupt really fast. And then you write a book on it. Yeah. Don't let this happen to you.
That's
my
funny.
Dad used to say in the stock market, his motto, unfortunately, was buy high and sell low.
Right. Like, just get in the wrong order.
He's like, every time I think I'm good, and then
he's doing the right thing. He's just doing it in the wrong order. That's exactly. That's funny. But what happened with her? Like, she's doing the shoes. She had to buy the shoes. So she makes $1,000. She pays $300 for the shoes. She got $700 left. She didn't pay taxes.
She didn't pay any taxes on any of it at the end of the year. She had made a tremendous amount of money. Like, I was shocked at how much money she made. And then she's like, I don't have the money to pay those taxes.
She needed you to negotiate her tax problem.
I'm not going to get into that because she's probably going to hear the podcast. Yeah. But it was just, you know, it's like, and then they just, instead of handling it, they just abandon it. I'm just not going to do that anymore because then now they're scared. Like, I screwed up. Okay, well, you did, but you're making a boatload of money. So let's just take this part and put it aside.
Yeah.
Why would you give up? It's not like you lost money. You just spent all the money you got. And it was a lot. So, you know.
But there's thousands of Americans that are in those positions.
Because they don't understand logically. Well, there's no money left in my bank account. That means I didn't make any money. No, you got a new car. Right. You bought a house and you got new clothes.
Not all deductible.
You did make money.
Right.
You just spent it all. And that's the problem. Right. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, well, we got to teach people how to save.
You know, it's interesting. Because you have an interesting combination of things. I think a lot of us are very right brain, right? Because we're creatives and we want to make this, want to build this and do that. But a lot of people are missing on the financial side, the number side. It's the part that they do shy away from and they don't do their numbers. And you obviously didn't, you went right into bookkeeping. So, you know, that's not, and really because people do not pay attention because it's boring or they're afraid to find out they're not making any money, which during coronavirus, you get rid of cash flow. And it reveals a lot of things.
Right?
You know?
The desperation because people that were going paycheck to paycheck. Right. All of a sudden,
it's just cash flow getting them through. And you got to measure that stuff. Do you know what Profit First, Mike Michalowicz's books?
I have not read it.
Yeah.
Heard of it, but have not read it.
It's basically a pay yourself first type of a system, but he's put it into a system that works for the average person, bank accounts and moving money around. But yeah, I mean, people just don't do that. If you don't put money aside for taxes or whatever, it's not going to be there at the end of the year.
Right.
Or profit, or whatever you're doing, or vacation.
And, you know, because people get so stressed out about it, you know, I wrote one of the books, I think it was number 4 in the series, because, you know, I wrote 12 books in 12 months.
Right.
I think it was number 4, and it was called You're Broke, Not Broken.
Right.
And helping people recognize that your internal value has nothing to do with your external circumstances. You know, people can get into situations. Yeah. You can have an investment that you heavily
invested in.
It didn't work out and whatever. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't change your value. But I created this system inside where this man who ended up literally losing everything and having his car towed away while he was buying the last dollars worth of ice cream for his child. Like, true, right?
This is a true story?
No, it's true in my head because I wrote it, but it's, you know.
Probably happened to somebody.
Right, probably did. But, created this system for his 3-year-old to teach him how to manage his money using something, you know. Well, I won't bore you with it now, but you know, it's really cool. And it, like I said, when you can break something down to a 3-year-old level, anyone can, you know, move that system up because it's very simple about what you're separating money for. And, you know, that you have to, you can't spend money that you don't have. And if you separate it, like my mom, when I was a kid, used to have this little accordion envelope. And it was all cash. My dad was in the military.
Right, different go get things for different. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
rent,
mine used to do with
coffee
cans, you know.
Right, and so hers was this little thing, and one of them was contributions. Like, you know, so when we'd go to Sunday school, my mom would give us each a dollar. You know, there's 4 kids. Give us each a dollar to give in Sunday school to teach us from a young age that you want to, you know, that you need to give. But it was cash in this little envelope.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
And so I had these envelopes that we used for scrapbooking that I used as a giveaway for that book, you know, teaching people. And here's the little cat. Here's the thing for, you know, what we call SIDS. And, you know, and like I said, we'll talk about that another time, but just to teach them how to separate money. And like I said, when you can break it down to a 3-year-old level, then anyone can do it. And then can stop making people feel incompetent and ill-equipped to handle the simple things of getting your own apartment or, you know, buying groceries or right. or whatever. And that's
why
we have
financial literacy in this country.
30-year-olds that's still in their mama's basement.
They still
right?
do. I know they used to do this and it used to work. Remember Christmas clubs? They still do that at the banks. My mom would have this book and she was basically paying herself. Uh-huh. So she'd pay $25 to the Christmas club every month. Right. And then by the time the holidays were Jewish, but it doesn't matter. By the time the holidays came around, they had money in there to buy right. presents for the kids and whatever. I don't think they do them anymore. Such a good idea.
I'm sure they don't, but I do remember. I never remembered until you just said that my mom did have that. I remember the Christmas club because it was home savings and loan.
Everybody's
right?
mom had a Christmas club.
Right.
You know? Yeah,
I love that.
Because it was just a concept, a way for the bank to get, they're in business, right? They want to get you to make deposits. Yep. It was a way for you to make deposits and then you spend the money and start all over again. And then, there's a lot of those systems out there, but you're right. People don't create a system for their life and they're just too busy dealing with, you know, having kids and getting a house and getting a mortgage and they'll give you a credit card. And next thing you know, they got all this debt. They're ahead of where they are in life in terms of their income. Yep. They can't keep up with it all. And it's some people go really dark, but you know, right. other people struggle. And then you find out your best friend tells you, oh God, I'm struggling. My husband's got to file for bankruptcy, all this stuff. And then you start realizing this happened to a lot of people, like 90% of the population faces financial trouble. Maybe it's higher, right?
Right.
During their lifetime.
They're completely ill-equipped for what comes. And then, you know, all of a sudden the credit card applications start coming. Any college kid, Elijah, 16 years old, they started sending him.
Yep.
You're like, you can't get credit at 16, but they're just prepping. I don't think so. You have to get a parent. You can't.
No, I think you got to be 18. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But at 16,
but he's on the mailing list already. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know,
he'll get mail for a couple of years and then he'll be conditioned. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or fill it out and they'll have his information ready the minute he's, and then they send him an email.
You know, there was something I was going to say. You said you bought your first house when you're 19. Mm-hmm. Today, I don't think you could because you wouldn't have a credit history.
Probably not.
That was long enough because it's such a big part of our ridiculous society.
But you know what? Now that we're saying that, I know I had a shell credit card when I was 16. Maybe my dad was a co-signer because I know you can't legally sign it, but I know I had one. That's how I got my credit.
You could. When you're 16 or older, you can sign a contract.
No, not in California.
Oh, really? New Jersey, you can sign at 16.
You have to be 18.
Yeah, 16. So you could do it, but I think they would require a co-signer. Yeah. Which can own a car.
Right? Yeah, you can't own a car.
What do you need a gas card for, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I love
it. All this stuff is really good because you lived it, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It must be frustrating when you meet somebody and you know they have a lot of potential and you're trying to help them and they just don't absorb, you know, it just doesn't.
Right? It's painful.
Yeah.
Like Terry and I were just talking about, you know, because the clients, I'm very selective about clients that I take on because I
enjoy your life too.
I do. And I will only work with people now. And I don't mean this to sound rude or disrespectful, but I only want to work with people that are actually going to do the work, right? Yeah. When we're talking, like if you're not going to do anything that I say to you, then why
I don't know who that's going to be more painful for you.
Right?
Or for
it them. Is. And that's because I'm
and
so excited.
You don't
excited,
need their
right?
money. So.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's like, and that's my husband goes, honey, just don't do that to yourself because you get so involved. Like you want to go fix it for them, but it's never going to stay fixed because they won't do the work. They say, oh yeah, I didn't have time to read that. I didn't have time to do that.
It's not important to them.
Exactly. And you know what, if it's not important,
that's okay.
Wait, save this money then,
right.
Like the Christmas club, wait until you're actually ready to move into action and then let us help because
might never be ready.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they're going to steal parts of your life while you're so not addicted. That's the wrong word. You're so excited and you want to help them and you see all this potential and you're giving them part of your life that you will never
get
back.
Part of my mind.
Right.
Because I'm going, oh my gosh, we could totally do that. We could that's
and they can't. And they're like, oh, I didn't have time to get to that. I mean, to a certain extent, it's a little insulting, but they don't mean it that way. It's the same way in law. I mean, I talk to business owners all the time. Listen, we got to do X, Y, and Z. And they're like, yeah, we need to get to that. I'm like, listen, just do it before you die. Like, don't, because I do have a lot of cases right now where people died and they didn't have business stuff in place and they don't have a will. And even New Jersey is not as bad as California, but it's difficult when you die without a will.
Oh yeah, and the fact that probate takes so much of the money, and then it's
and by the way, you have to post
money.
A bond. I don't know about out there in New Jersey because they don't know, maybe there are creditors that show up, and the courts don't want to have the creditors screwed because the beneficiaries took all the assets, and they make you post a bond. It's like 1%. So if it's $1 million estate, was it 10 grand?
That's crazy.
And you got to do it before you get appointed, so you might not have access to the bank accounts,
and you might not even have the money. So what do you do then?
Find a friend to give you money for a couple of weeks. Yeah, I got one right now where they're trying to find money because they need a $5,000 bond or whatever it is. You know,
that's where all these letters I'm getting about the $2.5 million that the prince of something wants to send me, and that it's like oh my gosh,
those are great,
right?
You know, did I tell you about the scam that the guy in Alabama? Did I tell you that story? So I get this email. So I do a lot of marketing like you do, right? So I get this email about a guy selling a piece of construction equipment. It's about $800,000 sale. Do you do purchase agreements? Sure. So, and it was, dear Mr. Beinhacker, was it weird looking? So I wrote him back and I said, sure, I do that. And so he writes back, how much would it cost, whatever? And I see he's in Mississippi. So I write back, I said, listen, I'd love to help you, but I'm a New Jersey attorney. I don't know who referred you to me, but you're in Mississippi. He said, no, that's not a problem. The company we're selling it to is in New Jersey, and he gives me the name. They're a big construction company. I looked them up and whatever. So I said, okay, here's my retainer agreement. I need this retainer, whatever. So he sends me back a letter, signed retainer. And he said, listen, the buyer is sending a check for a deposit. You hold it in your trust account and you can take your fees out of that. I'm like, okay. So I didn't get anything in the mail, right? So finally I get a package that comes and it says it's being held in customs. So I said, the company's in New Jersey and you're in Mississippi. How is this being held in customs? Oh, well, the broker's in Canada. He gives me the story. So I go, all right, whatever. So I never got it, right? So weeks go by. So one day the package does arrive. I don't know how. It comes to me. I open up. It's this. I still have it. It's this Chase bank check for like $150,000. He tells me to deposit the check and I'm supposed to send him 80% of the money, and we're hold back 20% till they inspect the equipment. I said, okay, that's great. Now, listen, I'm an attorney. I don't know you. I have to do my due diligence. Get me a contact at your company, and I'll call the company in New Jersey just to verify everything. Ghosts me. Like, I don't hear from him anymore. So I said, you know what? I looked up this company that was on his email. It was a real company in Mississippi. So I called the company, and I get through this woman, and his name is like Michael or something. She says, would you like to speak to the real Michael? And I said, he's a real person? Like, yeah. And this guy has been masquerading as him for a couple of years now. He's in some other country, maybe Canada. That's where the package came from. So I finally got this guy on the phone. He tells me that the Birmingham FBI came to his office because some attorney got taken for like $250,000.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, boy, I hope the bank has insurance because I'm sure the guy didn't have any money.
Wow.
Yeah, some attorneys are just desperate. They, and they deposit the money. As soon as it's deposited, it'll be available in a couple of days, but it doesn't come back through the Federal Reserve System for a couple of weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
See, it's so sad. And that's why people are so skeptical now. They can't even trust. You can't trust anything right now. I mean, what? Yeah.
But yeah, but if you think a Nigerian prince is leaving you a couple of $1 million,
well,
a little off.
I mean, I'm worth it. I mean, I'm
sure. They obviously looked you up and they were like, well, we got to give Vicky this money.
And kind of went like this in bullseye. Oh, that girl. That's the one.
Right. Exactly.
I'm worth it for sure.
Right. Well, it's not even that strategic. It's these people that are so poor, they don't have anything. Yeah. They're in these internet cafes and they're just trying to make a living. They don't think about you on the other end and what they're doing to you.
So sad.
I know. It's sad. And a lot of people have to be, I've had people lose jobs because they fell for one of these scams where, you're transferring money. Yeah. Like during, those are really bad, but I'm talking about like somebody's doing a real estate transaction and they hack the system. They start watching the timing of the transaction, like the day before, they send fake wire instructions and it looks like it's from the lawyer. Yeah. Don't want to always confirm those. That people lose their deposit, go to some Chase account and off to probably Russia.
That's China. So sad.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Well, it's a good thing that there are honest people like us in the world that we at least try and
fight the good fight, right?
We try and help people. Cause that's like I said, the worst thing we can do is do nothing. What is that? Nathan Hill? I don't remember. Yeah, I'm going to get my quote wrong, but you know the one I'm talking about, right?
But Terry's right. You can't help everybody because I know they just won't. We're only going to help 20% of the 20%. Probably.
He's like, babe, no. Like I'll go, but honey, I could. And he'll go, no, No, like, you know, I can already see it. You're super excited. Are they really going to fall through? And then, you know, just like,
you can be devastated because you can feel like, I could have helped that person. And they, right? I feel, you know, you just got to, you got to just walk away. You just got to say, you know what? Can't help everybody. Think about all the people you've helped though this week, you know?
I know. I talked to one of my clients and she's like, Vicky, her name's Shannon, and she won't mind if I tell her name's Shannon Mattern. And we started working together. I think maybe 5 years ago. And I think we worked together for three years. I was coaching her every week. And she is such an outrageously, incredibly talented girl. I mean, like I look and I would just say, girl, because I actually reached out, she wanted to pay me. And I said, you know what? I tell you what, I'm going to let you do this for me. I'm going to charge you a discounted rate, but I'm going to make you responsible for this, all this stuff right here. Because I'm telling you right now, you are a gold mine and you just can't see your own value right now. And so we worked together. And so I talked to her the other day and she's like, I am living the dream that you saw it. I couldn't see it because we have this little thing one time and she was, I'm so done. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm just going to, I'm letting it go. And I was like, okay. Just really quick. So if any of your listeners are in this situation right now, or they're feeling completely overwhelmed and they just want to give up, what I said to her was, you know, that there's value in your knowledge. And so why are you going to take your self-driving Uber car and abandon it on the side of the road when at least the worst case, now you could at least park it in your garage until you're ready to use it again.
That's a good analogy.
Right? Let's not leave it abandoned by the side of the road. Because it's capable. You already have people that you've taught and trained through courses and this and that can do the work. You can get paid, pay them a piece of the pie, and still be making your passive income over here because you've already taught them. And so we went through this thing, and she actually, and I can divulge this because she actually does what's called a money report, which she tells people every week. And we had to get her to making $10,000 a month before she could quit her full-time job. So she goes, Vicky, I made $40,000 last month. You know, my husband and I just built a custom home, right? That's what I'm saying. That those are the people, because every week, and she goes, I know some days I was whiny or I was this. I said, no, you had bad days. We all have those. It's not the same as not doing the work.
Right.
Having a bad day and having to walk somebody through it. We all go through that.
Right.
But you did the work. You did the work. You did the work. And look at you now. And she goes, I know. I can't believe it. I never thought I would be here living my dream. Well, and so that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Well, isn't that the secret? The secret is that successful people do the things that unsuccessful people are unwilling to do. Not that they can't do.
Right.
That's, I think I read that in a speech from like 1929 or something.
Right.
Right. It's not, you don't have to be like a rocket scientist to be successful in business. You just got to do the work.
And be consistent. That's what I always say. Be consistent. One of the chapters is called The Queen of Consistency, right? Just be consistent. If you know what you need to do and you do it every day, because I was in a wheelchair for 3.5 years. And so
you were?
Yeah, I was. I took
another podcast episode.
Right? I know. I was getting an award. The molding came off, came down the stairs. Long story. But anyway,
when you were getting the award, you were walking down off the stage.
Yes.
And the handle came off the wall.
No, the molding on the stairs.
Yeah.
So
like the stringer.
You can cut this into another episode if you want, but this is really good. So yeah. I was number two. My friend from Canada was number one, right? And I say that because that means 8 other people had already walked down this set of stairs.
It was built
to look like a cruise ship because we were going on. It was built for this.
Yeah.
And they had this big fat molding and these teeny little stair things. So when the molding came off, it was half of the step. The steps was tiny. So when it came off underneath my foot, I came down and went down an entire flight of stairs in front of 7,000 people. Okay. 7,000 people. And then of course they went,
right.
And it's like, you know, the
pin drop
thing,
probably. Yeah.
Pin drop. I had never experienced it until that moment. Right. And the vice president of sales comes over, his face is white, right? Like I'm just sitting there kind of shocked. Like, happened, you know, and he picks up the molding and he goes and he kind of throws it across, you know, and helps me up. And then I went, you know, just waved at everybody.
Here, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't. I think it was still the adrenaline. And then
it was like the bone was protruding out of your leg.
It wasn't like that.
Okay.
I hear my friend from the top of the stairs. Oh my God, her pants are ripped.
Like
my butt
up.
Is hanging out. I'm bleeding.
Oh.
So she runs down the stairs, skips over the one that's broken, wraps her shirt around my waist so I could at least not have my butt hanging out for all these people. And so I had to stand up there with one hand holding, because the sleeves were 3/4 sleeves. Stay one hand holding that and one hand holding my arm.
Oh my God. And I assume the company paid your medical bill, right?
Well, that's another story. But anyway, they
built the stairs,
but they
right?
did not. So really? That was, that, yeah, that's, but then I didn't know any better. Now, how did I know you right. at the time?
No, I don't
See?
Do that kind of law.
It doesn't matter. You would have said, Vicky, you need to talk to someone.
Correct.
You know, and you would have said,
or I would have negotiated something before you went to a litigator. Exactly.
So anyway, I didn't know I had torn the ligament in my hip. And oh. so I kept walking, and it got tighter and tighter. Anyway, I ended up with 7 bulging discs in my spine.
Oh God!
Because it torqued it over and over, you know, for so long.
Oh, you passed on a big lawsuit.
Yeah, right. So, but anyway, see, yeah. we still can be successful even when we don't have that avenue. And I, because I was so consistent, even though I was in a wheelchair and I couldn't do what I was doing, I was making my phone calls. I taught my team what to do. I still stayed in the top of the company.
Right.
But, you know, and like I said, with not the ability to do some of the things.
Right.
I've done.
Systems work. It helps you be consistent. You do exactly. it the same way. It doesn't have to reinvent it every time. You're going to screw it up.
See, you and I,
yeah,
we get it.
We see eye to eye. So let me ask you. So Evict the Bully in Your Head is, I think, yeah. available. I got it on Amazon.
Amazon, you can get it on my website if they want a signed copy.
And the selling book is called?
Direct Selling 101.
101, right? Mm-hmm. That's on Kindle, I know. And you can get it on in hard copy.
Yes, you should be able to get them all there. Like we had trouble with the actual printing, and I had to I started my own publishing company because our publisher didn't keep up with me. I know, right? Because I didn't have anything else to do.
You're
while
like, I like that car, but let's build our own car.
Well, they couldn't keep up, right?
I know,
and so because that's hard. Now
none
I understand why. But yeah, so we did. We started our own publishing company, and then when COVID hit, the printing of anyway, things went a little awry. So the physical copies are available for the first two, and then the other ones are digital copies. But we're working now because then we moved, and then you know, so I had to, now we're ready to get the rest of the printed physical printed copies. But those two you can get on Amazon.
Actually,
now.
I was talking to somebody. I don't know. You probably know this already, but there's a way to take a printed copy, like a PDF, mm-hmm. and email it to a Kindle address, and it ends up on your Kindle.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And so I do have Kindle yeah. for both of these. And you said that one of them wasn't up
this
there.
One
so.
Yeah, it wasn't. The Victor the Bully in Your Head wasn't available on Kindle.
Well, I'm glad you have the physical. So you can touch you can touch and see the drawings, and you can see the Fictionary in the back. Because,
well,
you
also
know,
autographed it for me.
See, there you go.
I got that. Hashtag you are enough.
Right? That's yeah. what I'm talking about. That's-
so tell me, well, I mean, we'll put links in the show notes to VickyFitch.com and all the stuff you're doing, but what's the best way for people to follow you, to interact with you, to learn from you?
Following on my social channels, which, okay. you know, is on most of them is Vicky Fitch, you know, VickiFitch. A couple of them, it's Vicky Fitch or Vicky underscore Fitch. I call it the curse of the underscore.
But if they search on Facebook, on Instagram,
go to my website, go to VickyFitch.com, and you can see all of our social handles there. And you can order the books at VickyFitch.com/5K. You know, you can, like I said, you can get in touch with us. We have some free courses and free stuff that's up there as well. And, you know, they can, and watch my daily live stream shows. So, you know, come and visit.
All right. Well, this was a pleasure. Terry told me that we would hit it off, and I get all charged by this stuff. I remember when I used to, you were talking about, like, you know, absorbing content. Remember when everything was on tape and you would cassette tape and you would get those books, they would open plastic, right? And you'd pull them out while you're driving, you pull the next tape. I remember, I don't even know what I did with all of them because now it's all downloaded stuff.
Well, you know what? With everything that's going on right now, with things getting canceled and stuff, I still have my physical copies. I've got my physical tapes. I got my physical movies.
How do you play them?
You know,
I don't
right?
have a tape player anymore.
See, I do. Terry always made fun of me, but I do. I kept them.
you're ready for the next pandemic.
The only thing I don't have is an 8-track tape player.
Oh,
but everything else, I'm covered.
I bet you could find one of those on like eBay.
Right? I got my first do you remember? Did you have an 8-track player?
I did, yeah. A cassette player and an 8-track player.
Right.
Yeah.
My first 8-track.
A small unit. You'd stick it in the top and yeah.
My first one was Foreigner 4 was my first.
That might have been my first one, that or Fleetwood
right?
Mac or something like that. Yeah.
Right.
You know what my first cassette tape was? Because I didn't buy it. I think my parents bought me, like, I was little, like Neil Sedaka. something right. like that.
On, I like know. Neil back in the day, well, right? It's know. Probably not the first CD, the tape I would have bought, but you
right,
know,
exactly.
I like Neil.
Me neither. Yeah, I love it. But it's pretty funny. But yeah, we could do another episode and catch up on all kinds of fun stuff.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Vicky. I appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Okay.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.